Teiko Heinosaari, all the way from Finland, University of Turku, and he will be telling us about incompatibility of observables in quantum theory and other probabilistic theories. Thank you, Teiko.
Thank you, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to tell you about my research. Let me first mention especially the collaborators that I have done this research: Paul Busch, Jussi Schultz, Will Stevens, and Alessandro Toiko, Mario Seaman, and then the last paper that we are still preparing, Jukka Kiukas and Daniel Reisner. So this is some things that we have done mostly last year, and some of the background idea is, of course, very familiar to all of you. We have some strange features in quantum theory. We would like to understand, are they very specific to quantum, or perhaps they are general, and you can have them in all sorts of theories. And incompatibility is certainly one very fundamental feature of quantum theory. It's also a nice feature in a way that, as you will see, it's easy to formulate in a more general probabilistic theory. Not all these features are such. So some questions that I will tell and answer to you is, first of all, how to quantify incompatibility of pair of observables. And then I will tell you how we can use this to quantify incompatibility of a probabilistic theory. So that's what we are really interested about. Then there is a question I put to answers because they may be more interesting in that way, that is quantum theory maximally incompatible among all probabilistic theories? The answer is yes and no, just to raise your curiosity. And then finally, I will tell you about something about robustness to noise. So you can ask if I have equally incompatible pairs of observables. So we have just quantified it. Are they equally robust to noise? And I will also tell you that the answer is no, which may seem funny at the first sight. Okay, so what is a probabilistic theory? I only need some very simple steps here. So we have a set of states, can be just any convex set in some real vector space. And observable is an affine mapping. So it takes a state and gives you probability distribution of measurement outcomes. Only condition is this, that it must be affine. So if you take convex combination of states, it gives you corresponding convex combination of probability distributions. I will use this kind of notation. So X is outcome and rho is state. So this may look quantum state, but this can be any state. This could be also, I'm writing this in this discrete finite outcome way, but in the end we will also need continuum of outcome. So you could also have here just subset and the interpretation would be the same. I'm also dropping extra parentheses, so outcome can be also whole series of outcomes. You can get double or perhaps even more outcomes in a single round, so then I will simply list them before the state. And of course in quantum theory, these affine mappings can be identified with POVMs. I'm using POVMs quite interchangeably when we are talking about quantum theory. I add one assumption, that any affine mapping is a valid observable. Of course, you can have also theories where this is not true, but then the discussion is much more complicated. This simple assumption has some simple consequences. First of them is that your set of observable observables is automatically convex set. If you take two observables with the same outcome space, the convex combination is a valid affine mapping, so again, valid observable. And of course, this just corresponds to an experiment where you toss a coin and then choose between M1 or M2. Okay? Another simple consequence is that every constant map is an observable in your theory. I will call these trivial observables. They will be important for us. And of course, this is nothing else than just throwing state away and tossing coin and getting outcome. I will also drop this state. When we have trivial observable, it doesn't depend. The probability distribution doesn't depend on state, so we can simply drop that from the notation. Okay, so this is something that you're certainly very familiar with. And now we go to joint measurability, the key concept. Two observables are called jointly measurable if there is a third observable now defined on the product outcome space that gives these observables when you sum or y, you get m1, you sum over x, you get m2. So it gives them as marginals, but for all states, okay? And if m1 and m2 are not jointly measurable, then they are incompatible. So these are like dual notions, like separable states, entangled states. If you see this definition first time, you may think, but why marginals? I mean, why isn't this too special definition? But actually, various different definitions collapse to the same definition. Perhaps more operational definition is to say that you just have any observable M. Don't have to be defined on the product outcome space. And then you have row stochastic matrices that would be like classical channels. And you can show that if now the post-processings give M1 and M2, then there is actually also joint observable. The mathematical proof is very simple. You just define it in that way. And I mean, so you can think joint measurement as something like this. You measure, you get single outcome. But this is classical outcome. It's just a number. So you can, of course, duplicate it. And then you post-process it how you want, and you get x and y. And so joint measurement is nothing else than this. You can think this type of joint observable as some sort of standard form of joint measurement. You get marginal. So this marginal is, of course, very specific post-processing. Okay? Just to recall you something, what we have in quantum theory. So in quantum theory, all commuting POVMs are jointly measurable. The proof is very simple, and you, of course, notice that this kind of pointwise product, it gives you always correct marginals. And then you use commutativity to show that this is positive. Okay? But the important point is that commutativity is not synonymous to joint measurability, even in quantum theory. So two observables can be jointly measurable even if they do not commute. And you can give several sufficient, more general conditions than commutativity. For instance, if all anti-commutators are positive operators, then you can also write a joint observable, just as an example.
Is that condition obvious?
No, it's not obvious. Actually, this was in my paper last year. Again, it's simple. If you take paper and pen, you will see. But there is even more general, but more complicated, that covers this one. Any case, the I just want to say you that commutativity is very narrow class of jointly measurable observables. Okay, forget about quantum theory, that was just an example. Now we are back in probabilistic theory. And we want to quantify incompatibility. Remember, that was our task. First observation is that any probabilistic theory contains jointly measurable observables. You remember our assumption, from our assumption follows that we have trivial observables, and in that case, joint observable is easy to write. Of course, physically, this is also reasonable because you can always produce X and Y since your trivial observable doesn't need any input state. But we can generalize this to a more interesting, well, let's call it lemma. You fix T between 0 and 1. M1 and M2 are two observables, and T1 and T2 can be whatever trivial observables. Then these two observables that we call noisy versions of M1 and M2 are jointly measurable. So, okay, first of all, this is generalization because if you put T to 0 or 1, you see that it's just a joint measurement of M with trivial observable. And this also has quite intuitive explanation. Okay, you don't have to look the format. Just think about this kind of setting. I throw coin first to decide whether I measure M1 or M2. If I measure M1, then I throw another coin, can be differently biased coin, to get outcome for Y. And similarly, if I would have measure M2, then I make a random outcome for M1. So I always get X and Y, but I somehow cheat the other outcome, okay? And you can, if you write this kind of setting formally, it looks like this one. And then you calculate marginals and they are what I say. So the important point is here that you see that this, here is T and here is 1 minus T, so they sum to 1. And the reason is exactly this one. You are randomizing here 2 times. First you are deciding M1 or M2 and then you are randomizing the second outcome. Okay. And another very intuitive simple thing is that addition of noise, if you have more noise, it cannot make jointly measurable observables incompatible. So it can only make things more jointly measurable. That is what we would expect. And you can easily prove this in this framework. We have now tools to prove this kind of statement. And so if M2 is jointly measurable with some noisy version of M1, then if you make T smaller, so T prime is smaller than T, this is also jointly measurable with M2. These were some just simple basic lemmas, and now we are ready to define what we have started to call joint measurability region for two observables. And it's simply, you have box in R2, numbers from 0 to 1. And for each point you look, can I find some trivial observables, T1 and T2, that would make the noisy versions jointly measurable? And for some points you can find, and for some points you cannot find. Here is point 1, 1, for instance. So if this would be in the joint measurability region, then they would be actually jointly measurable. So typically you have to go down here. And you can show that this region is always a convex set. So it is something like this. And now if you think about lemmas that we proved, the simple lemmas, they are now in this context. They are saying that this kind of triangle is always in the joint measurability region. So it's kind of trivially in all joint measurability regions for any pair of observables in any probabilistic theory. So the interesting part is this additional region, okay? So let me tell you once again, if a point belongs to joint measurability region, then I can find noisy versions with those weights. And now we can already compare pairs of observables. So of course, I mean, smaller region is... No. Oh, this is other way around. This was, I was testing you. Someone noticed. Yes. This was other way around. So of course, more incompatible is larger region. Less incompatible is smaller region. OK, let's have some examples. What about sigma x and sigma y? This is what you always have to calculate first when you have new notion. 20 qubits will come later, okay? And referring to one lunch discussion. In this case, you can prove that the quadrant of the unit circle is the joint measurability region. This is not too difficult to prove. To see that this region is that at least this size, you simply can write a good guess for joint observable and see that it is actually joint observable of those weights. And of course, I mean, remember that due to convexity, we only need to produce the boundary and then we are done. Well, this is part of proof. The other part is to show that there is nothing else, but we will see later that this is indeed the case in a more general setting. Another example is Fourier connected mutually unbiased bases. So this actually covers the previous example. Take finite d-dimensional Hilbert space, fix some orthonormal basis, then you define another orthonormal basis and well, if you are familiar with mutually unbiased bases, the inner products are just constant, the modulus of the inner products. But it's not important right now. Anyway, this is kind of a nice pair of observables. And in this case, the proof is a little bit longer. I tell you in a moment how you prove this kind of thing. But now it's an ellipse, and when d gets bigger, the ellipse gets smaller. So d equal 2 is the qubit case, sigma x, sigma y. And then when you increase d, I think these are like small d's, and these are like, I don't know, probably this was like 100 already. So I took just some examples here. How you prove this kind of joint measurability region? Because I mean, I don't know about all joint measurements of this kind of noisy versions, but there is a trick. In this case, because they are Fourier connected, you can find unitary operators that make this A and B covariant and invariant. And then you notice that actually this kind of noisy version where you have uniform trivial observable is also covariant with the same unitary group. I mean, simply because the identity is invariant. Okay, but of course, I mean, we are not only interested of this type of observables. Remember that trivial observables could be something else also. But the trick is now the following. We have to look for these type of noisy versions where you have general type of probability distribution. But if they have a joint observable, we kind of average over the phase space, and we get the joint observable for these two things, where there is uniform distribution. I mean, this may look first a little bit odd, but when you think this, this makes complete sense. So you take your joint observable, you translate it to every point, but then you, in some sense, also translate it back with the unitary operators. So, and then you average all over this, so you force it to be covariant. And the structure of these is well known. They have this kind of seed operator. And once you know the exact structure, you can just calculate the marginals. And I emphasize that these tricks avoid you to, you don't have to calculate the joint measurement of all these kind of things. Which, by the way, I don't know when those kind of things are jointly measurable. But in any case, we can calculate the joint measurability region. Okay, then some example outside of quantum theory. So this is a square state space that is quite common in also other examples. You have four corners and other points are convex combination of those points. So when you specify observable, you only need to specify the values in the in these corners, right? And the observables that I want to study are M1 and M2. So M1 takes value 1 in these points, so also in the in this top line, and M2 is 1 here. And both are 0 in other extreme points, and the rest is coming from convexity. And then you can actually show that for these, the joint measurability region is just this minimal triangle, nothing else. There is nothing magic in the proof. You simply write what would be the joint observable, and then you check positivity. I mean, this must be probabilities, and you see that they cannot be positive unless that condition is satisfied.
Is this just two classical bits, or am I missing something?
No, I wouldn't say that these are
two simplex. Just the square state.
Oh. Yeah, what would be your answer? These are not classical.
Not classical because it's not a simplex.
Yes. You had some explanation. What would be what was the connection to PR boxes, Rob?
It's like half a PR box.
Okay, Rob can tell you why this is half of the PR box. But... Okay, in any case, you see that this is perhaps surprisingly incompatible pair of observables. Then I need one more concept, but this is easy one, don't worry. You can just look the figure. We have here some joint measurability region. I took the diagonal and I see where the diagonal hits the boundary of the region. And I took the x-coordinate. And that's what I call joint measurability degree of M1 and M2. So it's just a more simple quantification. You don't always have to draw the whole plane, but just give a single number. And of course, it's between 1/2 and 1, because the triangle is in the region always. And with this,
your joint measurability curves, they don't have to be symmetric like this example.
Yes, I'm so, just coming to it.
But therefore, they form a partial order, not a total order. Is that right? Like I can have
Wait until this slide, and then ask me that question.
Good.
Okay, so we can express some things, but not everything. We can, for instance, if this is 1, then by convexity the region is the whole square, and then M1 and M2 must be jointly measurable. Okay, and also, if this is 1/2, this is not good color. But anyway, it's just a triangle. Then again, by convexity, there cannot be nothing else. So the region must be just the triangle. And in this case, we say that M1 and M2 are maximally incompatible. But we have this answer to your question that we cannot express everything. Even if this is convex and it has some other properties, you can devise examples of pairs where the joint measurability degree is the same, but the regions are different. So these are not symmetric. So you cannot really, if the numbers are degrees are the same, you cannot really say that they are equally jointly measurable. It's just partial order. But at least these two extreme cases, for them, that's enough. Okay, then let's talk about probabilistic theory, incompatibility region of a probabilistic theory. That's simply the intersection of all those joint measurability regions for all pairs of observables. And well, of course, it's then similar kind of thing in the plane. And since it's just the intersection, if you have a single maximally incompatible pair, then your joint measurability region for the whole theory is just that triangle. But quite interestingly, it may happen that the joint measurability region for the probabilistic theory is just a triangle, but you don't have maximally incompatible pairs of observables. And the explanation is simply, well, you will see this in a moment, but the explanation is simply that the intersection of this continuum number of pairs can be the triangle, even if all of them are strictly bigger. So what is the joint measurability region of quantum theory? If we want to compare it to other theories, this is the first question that we should answer, right? First bound that you hit in quantum theory is if you have binary observables. In that case, we know that quantum observables are incompatible if and only if they can violate CHSH inequality in some setting. And then on the other hand, we know that there is still some bound for how much you can violate. And if you now simply look the how the Bell expression, what happens to Bell expression for noisy observables, you see that it simply scales with this T. And putting these all together, you will see that for binary quantum observables, you always have that quadrant, that circle, in your joint measurability region. Okay, second bound that you hit if you try to find maximally incompatible pairs is finite dimension. And this has also quite a reasonable explanation that consider this cloning map. I mean, this, you don't have to know about its properties, just the definition that you take your quantum state, you tensor it with identity, and then you project it to the symmetric subspace. It is optimal in many ways, as we know from that paper, but that's not important now. In any case, it's a valid CP map, and when you calculate reduced state from this one, you get something like this. So you have a coefficient depending on dimension, but not on the state. And then you have maximally mixed state, okay? And of course, we are very happy about this form because this doesn't depend on state. It looks good for us. The recipe is then simple. Just clone your initial state. You get approximate clones. And then make independent measurements of M1 and M2. Okay. And because the form of the reduced state was so nice, you actually get noisy versions that we were looking for. And you get this kind of lower bound for joint measurability degree. And of course, the important thing is here that this is always greater than 1/2. Putting this together with that mutually unbiased basis example. So here is dimension, and here is joint measurability degree. And the red one is giving upper bound for this joint measurability degree of our theory. We know that these kind of things exist. On the other hand, this blue one, cloning, is telling you cannot go below this one because you can always realize joint measurement with cloning if you are in this blue line. And well, again, I just repeat that the important thing is that this is always above 1/2. Actually, I don't know what's the exact curve, but it must be somewhere between these two. It could be that one or something between. So conclusion so far, there is no maximally incompatible pair of quantum observables in a finite dimensional Hilbert space. That's what we saw. But think about, again, that Fourier connected mutually unbiased spaces. If you take the limit d going to infinity, you get 1/2. So the joint measurability region for the whole quantum theory must be the triangle. Those ellipses, if you remember them, they go as close to triangle as you want. But what you would really like to know is, do you have a single maximally incompatible pair of observables in quantum theory? Like you had in that square bit example. And that was a single pair of observables that had already this region. Do we? Well, I give you 3 examples. One is a little bit cheap example. And cheap because it's a little bit artificial. Okay, what you know now, we must go to infinite dimension, right? And I take all finite dimensional Hilbert spaces, take direct sums, I get infinite dimensional Hilbert space, and then for each d, I take that kind of Fourier connected map. And then I define my A and B in a way that that in these blocks, they always act like that observable. So there is now extra outcome D which specifies where you are. And because of the limit property that we already saw, then the joint measurability degree must actually be 1/2. So this is maximally incompatible. So in this way, you can produce maximally incompatible pair by putting all MOOCs together. But okay, you may not be so happy about this. This looks a little bit artificial. How about some common pair of observables? If you just think about what you learn in normal course of quantum mechanics, what would you think maximally incompatible pairs? This is not exactly complementarity, but I mean, complementary pairs could be good choices. And if we start from positional momentum, so just take the usual positional momentum observables. You can formulate complementarity in several ways, but somehow useful for our purposes is this one, that for any bounded intervals, x and y, if you can be certain that you get outcome from this bounded interval x, then you cannot be certain that you get outcome or you don't get outcome in y. And similarly for momentum, if you know that your momentum value is in some interval, you cannot know that your position is in some finite interval. This is just one step in the proof. So one can prove that joint measurability region is actually then this triangle, but this is quite technical effort. I'm not aware of any somehow simple proof. There are several difficulties. You could think of that kind of proof that we had for Fourier connected mutually unbiased spaces, because I mean, these are also Fourier connected, right? And actually that is a good start. So you find first one parameter unitary representations that positional momentum are covariant and invariant. But the difficulty is then that you cannot really average in R2 in phase space. I mean, hard integral of real line, it's not finite. It's infinite, right? So you need to average with an invariant mean. And then you can average P over M's then as you average them in finite case, but you not necessarily get the normalized P over M. And actually, then you will see that this is the reason for this one. If you like mathematics, this is nice story, but I don't go into that now. Another pair that we looked was phase and number. This is I don't know if you are so familiar with this one. Number observable, of course, everybody knows. So you fix number states, and then you have this number observable. So this could be a one-mode electromagnetic field, and you think this as photon number states. And the phase observables, sometimes also called canonical phase observable, looks then like this one. I don't go into detail now, but it can be shown that this is the optimal way of measuring phase. This is not anymore sharp observable. It's not projection valued observable. And the complementarity of number and phase means now something different than for positional momentum. This is quite different pair because this is discrete, while this takes this is a set in the interval 0 to pi. And now the first part is quite easy. The A number state, you can easily see that, of course, number distribution is just a peak distribution, and phase distribution is just uniform distribution on the interval 0 to pi. But on the other side, we don't have really that kind of eigenstate for phase. We have only approximate eigenstates. So coherent states are approximate eigenstates of phase, and the phase distribution gets peaked if you make the energy of the coherent state higher and higher. And number distribution, of course, it cannot get uniform because your outcomes are all natural numbers, but it gets increasingly uniform. And again, I mean, this is one part in the proof, quite technical proof, that you need to show that these are maximally incompatible. Okay, summary so far before moving to the last topic. I just remind you that what we meant by maximally incompatible pair is something that if you look at the noisy versions don't become jointly measurable unless you have that trivial situation that you are in the triangle, that you can just make the joint measurement by tossing coin. And quantum theory is maximally incompatible in a sense that we have maximally incompatible pairs, positional momentum, for instance. But you can also say that it's not maximally incompatible in a sense that it has those limitations. For instance, binary quantum observables cannot be maximally incompatible. While in that square bit case, already binary case, you get maximally incompatible observables. So that's why I said yes and no in the beginning. And then a little bit more practical topic. Is it allowed in this Quantum Foundation seminar? Just stop me if this becomes too practical. Okay, so just recall the Bell CHSA setting. So you have Alice and Bob, they cannot signal. You send entangled states to them, and you know that with the proper choice, they can actually violate CHSA inequality. But I changed the rules a little bit here. You can think that we have quantum player who is somehow the boss in this experiment. Alice and Bob are her assistants. She is sending some entangled states and telling what they should do. But still, I mean, Alice and Bob cannot signal. So usual rules in that sense. But then there is another player, I call it classical player, that can disturb Alice. So exploding a bomb or shaking the laboratory or jumping or whatever. So classical player tries to make noise because we know that you lose quantum properties if the things are very noisy. And then the winner is simply ruled by CHSA inequality. If this quantum player's team can violate the inequality, then they are winner. If classical player can make enough noise, then she's winner. And okay, some specification. Just let's assume that the noise has this form that we have been talking all the time. I mean, of course, the observables could be deformated to something completely different. But I mean, it's a good form of noise. And recall also the result that we discussed earlier, that in this case of the two binary observables, breaking CHSH is equivalent that Alice has incompatible observables. So of course, Bob and the boss, quantum player, they may have to adjust, they may have to send different kind of entangled states, and Bob may have to measure different observables. But in the end, if Alice has incompatible observables, it's equivalent of violating CHSH. And then I just make simplified assumption that we don't look all these parameters. We put this mixing parameter to be same and also trivial observable to be same, just to simplify this discussion a little bit. And now when we are in binary outcome case, probability distribution depends only on a single parameter. And I parameterize it in that way. So B is bias. And the question is then, how should Alice choose A1, A2? so that the noisy versions would be incompatible with as many parameters T and B as possible. So T is somehow just the amplitude of the noise that the classical play is producing, and bias is then something that perhaps it can be quite randomly that perhaps classical player cannot really control P. Well, it is of course clear that Alice should choose some observables that give you maximal violation of CHSH. And okay, we are in binary case, so extreme quantum observables are actually projection valued observables. This is not true if you have more outcomes, but we can restrict now the projection valued P of M's. But is there then really difference? If you just maximally violate CHSH, is that all that you can do? Well, there is a difference. And for this, to see this difference, it's now useful to define joint measurability degree with respect to bias. So remember in our earlier definition, we were allowed to vary trivial observables as we like. But now I fix trivial observable. And this degree is now defined for each bias parameter B. It's kind of more refined way of defining joint measurability degree. And also remember that in that binary quantum observable case earlier, what was useful for us was Tyrrellson bound. You can simply state Tyrrellson bound in this way, that joint measurability degree is always greater than this one. But this one is actually smaller than general joint measurability degree. So this doesn't really help us. And one can now actually derive something that you can think as a generalized version of Tyrrellson bound in this context. And now, so you have 1 square root 2, but then you have some term that depends on B. But really crucial thing is that this doesn't depend on dimension. So in that sense, it is like Tyrrellson bound. I denote this by CB now. Again, sigma x, sigma y, of course we have to do it first before doing anything else. You can calculate this joint measurability degree with respect to bias, and you get that kind of funny function. And if you look the bound, so this CP is now this function. You can compare this with the bound. Okay, it looks a little bit the same, and actually it's not so different from CP. But they meet only in the P0. Otherwise, this is always higher, this curve, than this one. So here, red is incompatibility, means incompatibility, and other region means joint measurability. Okay, perhaps now you understand what we are looking for. We would like to have observables that satisfy this equality for all B's. So for instance, this sigma x, sigma y, even if it violates CHSH maximally, it meets that condition only for P0. But do we even have this kind of pair? What is your guess now? I mean, we are looking for binary observables. We have used our common example, sigma x, sigma y. What else you have? What would you try? Well, this is again a bit technical calculation, but you can actually derive a condition for each B when this equation is satisfied. And it you will see that it depends on the spectrum of certain product of operators. And we are requiring this kind of equation for all B's, but the spectral condition, I'm not now showing it to you, but it cannot be valid for all B's in finite dimension. In finite dimension, you can only have as many points as dimension in the spectrum. So you have a similar kind of conclusion as we had earlier, but now in a different context. So in finite dimension, you cannot find. But positional momentum come to rescue us again. But now we need to make binarizations of positional momentum. So I mean, half-line binarization, what I mean by that, we take the real line and we just put negative part, positive part. And so for instance, A1, now this is a vector state, probability of getting outcome plus, you simply integrate the positive part, or minus you integrate over negative part. So you only look if your particle is in positive side or negative side. And same for momentum. Okay, I think that was the last topic I wanted to tell you. Thank you for listening. Now we can throw a coin if I tell you questions or you tell me questions, or how we decide this.
This is unprecedented.
Maybe you have a slide that you can ask a question.
Why don't we take turns? You tell us one question and we give you
one. Okay, who starts? Coin. Okay, I can. Oh, yeah.
Can you go back to the slide? Well, you had the slide before you started the practice, or practical stuff.
It was a mistake.
Maybe not this slide. Okay. Yeah, this is it. Good. So, in some ways, it seems that perhaps this sort of way you're measuring incompatibility is unsatisfactory, because there may be many theories that are incompatible as you allow something like the dimension to tend to infinity. And it would be nice if you could somehow, in taking the limit, somehow sort of normally maybe multiply by the dimension or something like this, so that you get a more useful measure. Have you thought about that?
Yes, I mean, well, not really, but of course there is one point that I was somehow skipping, that I was talking about quantum theory, but then when we talk about probabilistic theory in this way, how I started, you fix state space. So actually, quantum theory, as I now talk about it, is collection of those quantum theories in different dimensions.
Right.
And we are not really, I agree with you that we are not really giving justice to that thing, that quantum theory is actually collection of those different state spaces. And that could lead to a more refined form of incompatibility.
So maybe one way to ask the question is to say, if you consider some sort of you know, generic general probabilistic theories, but which have a parameter n, which may be the number of distinguishable, perfectly distinguishable states, it's like n is,
mm-hmm.
Then it might be generally the case that even if they start off less incompatible, they get more incompatible as you increase n by this measure.
Yeah, I like that idea.
But,
yeah.
But then perhaps one could find a different measure that took account of that fact, and so then you could easily compare different theories.
Yes. I think one should go to that direction to have a first operational definition for dimension, and then do something like that. Yes, we haven't done it. That's only my answer. But I agree that this is too coarse, perhaps in that sense.
So I'm curious what made you choose the particular way of quantifying incompatibility that you did. So you said M1 and M2, and now we're going to imagine... So I think of your definition as being a special case of the following kind of intuition. the incompatibility of two observables is can be measured by how much noise I have to add to them to make them compatible. You know, the more noise I have to add to make them compatible, the more incompatible they are. But you're adding noise in this very particular way, wherein you're saying I take the observable or convexly some random. I could have also said, oh, I'm going to do a stochastic post-processing on the outcome of observable one and a stochastic post-processing on the outcome of observable two. Or you might have imagined a quantum pre-processing. There's sort of lots of ways in which you could have sort of added noise. And I'm just curious why you chose that.
I agree. I mean, in the beginning, perhaps it was not so clear, but somehow if you think about some ways how you would naturally do it in quantum theory are simply not general in a way that you could do it at this level. So remember that, I mean, this kind of noise we have immediately when we make only that simple assumption. Then there are other ways that could be more general, and you could still calculate, define them in a more also in this general framework. But this was a good balance between things that it didn't look, it had some motivation, it's some quite the intuitive form of noise, and you can still work on it. You can really calculate. So I would be somehow more, I would be satisfied to see also different kind of noise, but I just afraid that it would be difficult to calculate, to say anything. And of course, I mean, you want to draw pictures, right? So if you have a stochastic post-processing, how would you draw pictures? You want to have, one motivation that came later, that when people have a look, and this comes from this practical part, people have earlier look noise robustness, but not of incompatibility, but for instance entanglement or non-local correlations. And then they are using exactly this sort of noise. So this looks like reasonable first to do the same thing with observables for incompatibility. And perhaps then turn to a more general form of noise.
Are there any connections to marginal problems for quantum states, let's say? Looks, at least in flavor, looks kind of similar in magnitude.
Incompatibility, sorry. I mean, you can, if you think this, how I have now defined incompatibility, this is just incompatibility of observables. But you could also think incompatibility in a more general way. And then I would say that marginal problem is also sort of incompatibility.
Or if you consider a POEM as a quantum state for which one half is classical and simply records the outcomes and the other half, I'm not sure making myself clear. Take like a sum over all the outcomes, and for Alice take simply the projection onto a basis vector labeled by outcome X, tensor P of M element MX.
It's like Choi isomorphic state.
Yeah, something like that. And then it seems like it's incompatibility is essentially, or maybe some kind of marginal problem for this.
Yeah.
What do you mean by marginal problem?
That you have, let's say, a given, you know, a quantum state for a composite system AB, you know one for BC, and you ask, well, is there a joint state ABC which reduces?
You say you know the marginals and you want to deduce the,
or at least know whether there exists.
I think if you put them in that framework, you look CP maps don't specify if they are states or observables. I think you can put them into the same framework. But of course, there are also differences, like marginal problem of states is trivial when you have only, you give two reduced states. So you must give some over, I mean, if you have just two systems.
Okay.
So you must have three-partite system. But I mean, here I see that there is no that kind of trivial case here. So in some sense, they are forms of incompatibility, all of them, but then there are also differences, I would think. I think it's a good still to try to see them at the same level. Is it now my turn?
Yes, yeah, sure.
I had three questions, so again, I will only tell you two. Okay, so something that I would like to know, that what happens when you have n observables? You can do the same definitions. I mean, joint measurability is just the same. You have single observables that gives you right marginals. Joint measurability region, you define it just analogously, and then you can prove that this kind of triangle lambda n is in the joint measurability region of for all sets of n observables. But I know very little about this joint measurability region of quantum theory. And somehow the problem is also that I don't have a good candidate for maximally incompatible n-tuples. I mean, for instance, positional momentum, it was a very natural candidate for maximally incompatible pair. I don't know what would be that in those cases.
What about D plus one mutually unbiased bases for a d-dimensional system?
That I was thinking, and I think that it hits similar kind of problems as finite dimension, but also I'm not able to tell too much about the joint measurements, because there is no that kind of symmetry. If you have two mutually unbiased spaces, it's just finite phase space, and you saw the sketch of the proof. If you have d plus one of them, I don't know what's the somehow similar kind of summary that I could work on. And if we have to go to infinite dimension, what do you do then? What you have position momentum, and what would be the third one? I don't.
Continuously in the log of MUP.
Sorry?
Continuous in the log of this MUP.
Sorry, I don't know what the
fast basis in continuous setting.
Uh-huh. Okay, I have to think about it.
Is that just the other quadrature observables? So like in addition to Q and P, you could take cos theta Q plus sine theta P.
Yeah.
So you have a whole one parameter family of
I don't think this is going to be so incompatible with that one, because somehow you, if you're in a plane, you are still roughly, you can still use covariant phase space observables. But they are somehow too limited. Okay, this is easier to see in finite dimension. If you would be in finite phase space, you would have d square outcomes. Okay, that's fine for two mutually unbiased spaces, because any joint observable has d square outcomes. But if you have more of them, you would need much more outcomes. You have to go to something else. And I think something similar is true in infinite phase space, that you have to get out of the phase space. I'm not sure, but this is my feeling. Okay, what about, I go to, you can still give me answers to the first question, but I go to the second one. There is a notion of n-tuple-wise joint measurability. And it means that your set is not jointly measurable, but every n element subset is jointly measurable. Anyone heard of this concept before? And there is some conditions that you see easily, that of course, if every n element subset is jointly measurable, then also every smaller subset is jointly measurable. And perhaps some of you have even heard about this result, that in quantum theory, roughly speaking, realizes all of these possibilities. I think this is interesting result, that if you just tell how many observables you want to have and what kind of n-tuple wise joint measurability you want to have, you can realize it in a way that it's not n-tuple wise jointly measurable, but it is n minus 1. And this is like qualitative feature of incompatibility, not quantitative. And for instance, this feature is very, very natural to ask, is it specific feature of incompatibility of quantum theory, or does it hold in also other probabilistic theories? Have you thought about it already?
Not at all.
Perhaps I would also like to see other qualitative features of incompatibility. So there is like quantitative part and qualitative part. If we want to understand what is specific for quantum incompatibility, we have to keep in mind both aspects.
Any questions or answers?
Okay, if you go back to the previous one, and this is far from my area of expertise, but if you were to choose to have a multi-dimensional system, say a three-dimensional system, if I measure position and momentum in a given direction, I've got an incompatible pair. But if I measure position and momentum at some angle to each other, and I do that for more than two, so I choose three, four directions in which I measure position or momentum, I've got a set of measurements that I'm conducting, and the question is, are they compatible or are they incompatible? Is that going to fall within the...
That could be, yeah, I mean, that could be a natural candidate. Because, I mean, thinking about what you have to add for positional momentum, I don't know, but adding simply positional momentums in different directions, that could be a good candidate. I don't know anything about the answer, but yeah, that's a good candidate. Or perhaps, measuring the different times, perhaps also. Could be something.
Another possible candidate, I don't, just a guess, but I mean, you gave the example of the angular momentum variable sigma x, sigma y, and sigma z. So they form a natural set of three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what about generalizations of that? Or you know, what about representations of those three in higher dimensions or generalizations to other higher rank Lie groups?
Yeah, one. Well, I guess they have many different generalizations. One would be what Rob was saying, D plus one mutual and biased basis. And so that generalizes in.
You're saying that's a special case? What I'm saying is a special
case
of what Rob is saying?
Yeah.
Or said?
But I mean, I think that sigma x, sigma y, sigma z, you can generalize them also in different ways.
Yeah, I was thinking.
So that's, I have a feeling that also in this case you need to go to infinite dimension, but let me just repeat what I said to you earlier. I don't know maximally incompatible pairs in finite dimension even in the case of two observables. I only know that it's something between these two curves. I don't know what's the joint measurability degree and what would be the pair. It can be this mutual unbiased basis, but it can be something else.
And there must be many infinite dimensional Lie algebras somehow generalize sigma x, sigma y, and sigma z. Is there or even things that have, I'm not sure, but even Lie algebras that are finite dimensional admit only infinite dimensional representation,
mm-hmm.
unitary representation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have to go to
like the Lorentz group.
You had to go to infinite dimensions to find maximally incompatible.
Yes.
Pairs.
Yes, but of course you can rest. You can fix the dimension and ask then what's maximally incompatible. So this is saying you are not going to get one half, because cloning is always giving you higher than one half. But if you fix some dimension, you can still ask what is maximally incompatible in that dimension.
Is there a simple choice for the Chiffy observable to make this two observable most compatible?
Sorry, I didn't understand your question.
So you had to mix some observable with some giving observable such that they become compatible if you had a certain noise. So is there a simple choice for this trivial observable such that say you would need the least noise?
Did you say for a triple of observable?
Trivial.
Trivial. Yes, you have different choices of a trivial observable. So I mean, so what is the best choice? Is there a simple copy?
Best trivial observable. Yeah. If I may understand what you mean now. In this case. Remember. I told you that we restricted to these two outcome observables, and we restricted to projection value PUVM since they are extreme. And in that case, we are able to calculate this one, and we know that the uniform trivial observable is always making them most easily incompatible. So for if you have a, I don't know if this was what you were asking.
Yes.
So uniform, and also in that other case, this Fourier, where was it? Also in this one. This one, it was inside of the proof that we know that uniform trivial observable is the best choice if you want to make them jointly measurable, or worst choice if you want to keep them incompatible. But I know examples where the uniform trivial distribution is not the optimal choice. So we only know some cases, some classes of observables where the uniform is optimal, and otherwise we don't know. But I can tell you that it's not always the only choice. So you really need this freedom here that you are allowed to look all sorts of trivial observables.
So the graph you had with the red and blue upper bounds. Do those arguments generalize to more than two?
Cloning, yes. I mean, you can cloners. You can look, but then these upper curve, I simply don't know. I don't know enough of joint measurability of three mutually unbiased spaces. But cloning, I had a feeling that I even look it, but now I don't remember. I would expect that it gives you something similar. That's why I was saying that I think that you have to go to infinite dimension also in that case. No, I don't remember.
Any more questions?
All right.
Thanks. Take
that. Thank you.